Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Bring a little sunshine indoors with the exciting new arrivals in store or online at harrycurry.com.
Hello, good afternoon. You are very welcome to Liveline. Katie Hannan with you until 3 o'clock today. And I'll go straight over to Patricia. Patricia, good afternoon to you.
Hi, Katie.
Patricia, I was reading some of the email you sent in to us today to Louise Duffy there a short while ago. It's a very powerful email, very emotional. Just tell me, take me back to your state of mind when you were writing it, Patricia.
I suppose the simple truth of it, Katie, is that there was so much going on in my head that I just had to spit it out. That's the truth. I suppose I'm many things. I'm outraged, I'm furious, I'm heartbroken, I'm ashamed of our sector, I'm ashamed to say that I'm a nurse in a nursing home. I'm just ashamed of how we are treating the people in our society. It's just appalling.
I'll just remind our listeners, Patricia, that you're the Patricia McGowan, Director of Nursing at Nightingale Nursing Home in Haskra in Mayo. Or in Galway, rather, I should say, isn't
Galway,
it?
Galway, yeah.
And people might remember at a very, very bad time in terms of our engagement with nursing homes and the whole nursing home sector, at the height of the COVID pandemic, you were talking to Joe about the situation you had found yourself in that day, because we were being told by the government that help was being sent out to all these nursing homes that were struggling because staff were coming down with COVID and residents were coming down with COVID. And you brought us the news from the front line of what it was like for you on a day when I think almost all your staff and almost all but one or two of your residents had tested positive for COVID.
That's correct, yeah.
And I think people will remember it was a very powerful contribution that day, and it really opened everyone's eyes to what was actually going on inside nursing homes at that time. Tell us, we saw that programme on by RT Investigates last night. And just say great credit has to go to Aoife Hegarty, who's a reporter on it, and indeed the undercover healthcare assistants who went in and brought us out those, really exposed what was going on in there, and the initial whistleblower indeed that raised the red flag in the first place. And I mean, it was, there's no way of saying it was a very hard watch. There is no doubt
absolutely
about that.
Absolutely. It was traumatic to watch it. I watched it with the lady that owns the nursing home here. She's dedicated her entire career to looking after older people. And she turned to me at one point and she said, "Have I wasted my life?" You know? And I'm here 16 years and I'm wondering, what am I doing? You know, at the end of the day, I know, okay, this was pertaining to a particular organisation, but at the end of the day, the broader public out there are going to treat it the same as they treated Lees Cross. It's going to be every nursing home is the same. They're all bad. They're all money grubbers. The care is dreadful. And that just isn't the case. It isn't the case. I mean, it was reported earlier on your station, 87% of nursing homes are now compliant with the health regulations, the Health Act 2007. We have learned. We've learned from Lees Cross. We've learned from the introduction of HICWA into the equation.
But Patricia, I have to say, just on exactly that, like, I think the difficulty that emerged from last night's programme is that in the case of one of those two nursing homes, and these are nursing homes that are being run by a very large group, actually the provider of the largest number of nursing homes in the country, the Emis group, and that they, in one of those homes, they were entirely, if you had looked at the HICWA reports from that nursing home, and it was very, you know, they had people in there, they were listed, you know, that they were compliant again and again and again. So there is now an issue, I think, for a lot of people, was can we trust these HICWA reports now?
I understand that comment, but at the end of the day, it's very difficult when you have a situation where, I don't know, a team of two or three inspectors, whatever it is, goes into a facility on a given day. I mean, all they're taking is a snapshot, really, of that facility and the care being delivered in that moment. You can't really know a situation unless you're embedded in the situation. And I mean, at the end of the day, a policy can say anything. A response to a report can say anything. Paperwork can say anything. You know, and that's part of what HINQA looks at. It looks at the paperwork. It looks at your policies. It looks at your responses to complaints and all that kind of thing. And that's an important part of the service. But at the end of the day, they can only take a snapshot.
In terms of what we witnessed on that programme last night, I mean, there were so many examples of, I mean, I'm going to say the word poor care, but that hardly covers really what we were watching.
I'm afraid I'd use stronger than that now, but okay.
Exactly. And I'm sure most people would. But for you, like, what was your sense? As somebody who is in the sector, who understands what the needs of residents in these homes. And again, we've got to realise that these are not patients. This is these people's homes we were in last night.
Yeah.
And so just from your perspective, Patricia, what did you take away from it, you know, mostly?
I took away lots of things, really. I think a facility that has 115 or 120 or whatever it may be beds, that's not a home. That's a facility. That's an institution. It's not possible to run it as a home. Home means home. I mean, I had a gentleman that said to me this morning when I come in, "Good morning, darling, how are you?" And he offered me a cup of tea. Now, this gentleman is not in a position to get up and make me a cup of tea. He just physically isn't able to do that. But he offered it to me because this is his home. I'm visiting his home. And that's the way it should be. Smaller rural nursing homes, that's the service they offer. These big conglomerates that have 115 beds or whatever it may be, they're not there to provide a home. That's not a home. That's my opinion anyway. It's not a home. And I think there was a lot of emphasis on being short-staffed and supplies not coming in and all that kind of thing. Look, we've all faced days when we've been short-staffed or a delivery hasn't come in on time or whatever the case may be. But being short-staffed doesn't automatically make you unkind or disrespectful. It doesn't strip you of your humanity. And, you know, dragging someone along by the trousers, is that a lack of staff? I don't think so. I think that's a lack of care. Wiping your hands on a resident's clothes, that's not a lack of supplies, that's a lack of respect. There just seems to be no compassion and no empathy and no respect. And at the end of the day, it's like that girl said on the television last night, this could be your dad, this could be your mam. Would you be happy for them to be treated that way? And one of the girls on the programme last night, one of the staff of the facility said, "I wouldn't put my mam in here, not on my last breath." Now, what does that say about the service she's providing?
Yeah, and I do think watching the staff last night and, you know, again, it was a very hard watch. And I did hear Ronan Collins, the consultant who was part of that programme last night, this morning comment on this. And he used the phrase empathy burnout, that if you are working under very difficult conditions where there is a care culture that's not what it should be, that you know, ultimately means your ability to empathise with the people you're caring for just diminishes over time, and that's how you get people who behave like that towards the people they are caring for.
I understand the concept, but that doesn't excuse it. If you reach the point that you feel I'm not doing this to the best of my ability and I don't care about these people, then it's time to get out. There's plenty of jobs out there. If you don't care, don't work in a caring profession. That's how simple it is. I mean, if you don't care, you don't care. Move on.
I think a huge problem as well, though, as you hit on it there, Patricia, is the sheer scale of the nursing home care facilities that we're now putting in place. And there's been a massive drive towards increasing in size and smaller places, maybe like places like your own. How many beds would you have in the Nightingale nursing
31.
Home?
31. Yeah, 31.
So those a lot of those nursing homes, particularly in rural Ireland, didn't make it beyond COVID, did they? I mean, COVID was a massive extra stress on an industry that was, or a sector that was already under pressure. And I saw a figure there from a Nursing Home Ireland, the umbrella body, saying 77 nursing homes, and most of them smaller and in rural Ireland, had closed down over the last 5 or 6 years. Which means, of course, that the what happens is that the bigger for-profit nursing homes just get bigger and bigger. After that very traumatic time over COVID, and we saw what happened to so many people who had been in nursing homes. Leo Varadkar was on the Late Late Show, and he was asked about this. And I think we might have a very quick clip of what he said at the time.
Our model into the future was to build lots of modern new nursing homes, all single rooms, very high quality. Maybe that's not the right approach. Maybe we need to enable people to stay at home for much longer if possible. And then instead of having big, massive 150-bed nursing homes, maybe have smaller communities like we've done in the disability sector. So there's a lot to think about after this.
Yeah, a lot to think about. But what has actually been done is the big question, Patricia.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with him. He's absolutely right. There are people who could be cared for at home for much longer. There are people who should be cared for in local communities, such as small rural nursing homes that are in their locale, where their families and friends can visit them. Single en-suite rooms, yes, sure, have the option there, but not everybody wants to be in a single en-suite room. I mean, we have married couples in the nursing home that want to share rooms. We have brothers who may have lived together all of their lives, single bachelor men, and they want to share a room. So, you know, do we change that? Do we socially isolate them into these single en-suite rooms? You know, there isn't enough thought that goes into these things, I think. You know, I don't know. I just don't understand. Well, I suppose I do understand. These big conglomerates, they're out for profit. They want to make the money, and that's how their business model works. But at the end of the day, it shouldn't supersede care. If they're in a caring industry, they need to care.
But I mean,
that's what small rural nursing homes have over these big conglomerates. We have heart. We actually care about our people. We care about our staff, we care about our residents, we care about our residents' families. It's a community within a community. And that's the only way it'll work. It's the only way it'll work to the standard that we want for our mothers, our fathers, our aunts, our uncles. I mean, if a society is to be judged on how it treats the most vulnerable, my God, how are we going to be judged?
The move as well, like over the last 20 years or even more, away from public beds and into the private sector is really, really, really dramatic. So I'm looking at the figures here. Like the majority back, if you go back into the 1990s, most of the nursing homes were public. There were public beds and they were under what the HSE would be then.
Mm-hmm.
By a couple of years ago, 16% of beds were public beds in nursing homes. Private for-profit providers had skyrocketed up to 81% of all beds. And the other figure, which is like mind-boggling, 10 investment funds hold one-third of all nursing home beds in this state.
And that should be a concern for everybody. I mean, have we not learned from the situation with Southern Cross in the UK? Where exactly the same thing happened. The majority of care was under large corporations who went bust, and then they sold and they went bust again. What happens then? Where do all of these vulnerable older people go if that happens? And yet the small rural nursing home has been hounded out. You said it yourself. You got the information from NHI. And yet, on the other hand, we have HICWA saying, well, the ideal is for people to be looked after in their community where they have social engagement with their previous life, if you like. It just isn't happening.
Well, that's the difficulty, of course, because if, you know, you have to migrate to the bigger, you know, to the population centres to get avail of a bed, you're then cut off from your family and your friends and the possibility of those visits that keep people going.
Exactly.
Will you hang on, Patricia?
It just doesn't all seem to line up.
Will you hang on for me, Patricia? I've got Celine on the other line. Celine,
sure.
Good afternoon, Celine.
Hi, how are you?
How are you, Celine, after watching that?
I was very upset because I have some experience of nursing homes because my mother was in a nursing home for 9 years. She only passed away 2 months ago. So I have, I'm not an expert, but I certainly have a lot of experience of being in a nursing home and different styles of management. And I guess Patricia was talking about her colleague there who said, you know, have I wasted my life doing this? Well, I want to assure her that she hasn't, because my mother had wonderful carers who were often hindered by insufficient staffing. And I feel that they're really scapegoated when the real difficulty comes from these greedy, profit-driven owners that are satisfied to leave them struggling with insufficient staff numbers, you know, and resources. And there's lots of examples of that last night. There was that poor man, you know, very upsetting, and a very genteel man, you know, could hear him saying, hello, you know, anybody there? And there wasn't anybody there. And he requested the toilet, and he was told that we don't have any sheets, you know, so you should pee in your pad. Like, really? Is that how we treat that man who's probably, you know, paid his taxes, worked his whole life? And there's other instances, shocking ones, of sharing gloves. Are we really serious here? There was no gloves. So these poor practices, I think, although Patricia there mentions, you know, poor practices by staff, which we did see, you know, these lack of resources was driving some of these poor practices. In addition to insufficient staffing, you saw there one staff, she was left in a room with a number of residents. A man asked for half an hour, could he go to the toilet, and he couldn't be brought. Now, that was as distressing to that carer as it was to that man. And, you know, I've seen examples of this in my own mother's home where, you know, you ring the bell, nobody comes, but they're not coming because two of them are engaged with another person in the room and there isn't another person to help, you know. And you could see staff there stating the problem. So they said, look, we have these, you know, 21 people and there's only three of us. And they were just fobbed off, told, well, the HSE says, you know, that there's seven residents to a staff member, which turned out not to be true. But the actually shocking thing that was shocking for me was there actually is no minimum recommendation. And they said, oh, it's based, you know, left up to clinical assessment. Well, now that's a very big loophole that can be abused for those people, you know, and... You know, another example of that was when that poor man eventually went to sleep. He'd been asking for help with the toilet. But he was woken at 6 a.m. to get dressed. Nobody washed him or cleaned him. They just put his clothes on and put a sheet over him. And that was evidently to help out the day staff because they knew there wasn't enough of them and they were trying to help out their colleagues by getting this man dressed. Absolutely not patient-centred. So a lot of what I saw there, I know Patricia, and I agree with her, those practices were bad. It was extremely upsetting to see that man in distress dragged along.
Oh,
but you
really
may be
was.
Sure those staff were on the clock and told you have to get them in there. You know, I think that that individuals are often scapegoated. And I can't stress enough, the my mother's care home was 48 people. And initially, it was owned by one private owner. And it was a very, very different place then. And when Amaze took it over, there were immediate differences. You know, staff left.
Sorry, Celine. So just to be clear, this nursing home that your mother was in, as you say, for 9 years, this was actually one of the nursing homes that was taken over by Amaze.
Yeah, it was.
And it's not one of the ones that we saw on the television last night.
No, it's a different. It's a different caravan. I'm not going to mention it because I'm so grateful to those people who looked after my mother. And they were so kind to her and kind to us. And in very difficult circumstances. And like we really trusted them over COVID. And, you know, when we could only see our mother on a screen. And these are the people we're placing our trust in. But my mother did lose weight over that time because we're so lucky as a family, myself and my siblings and my in-laws. She would have a visitor every day. So we would do quite a lot of the, you know, some feeding and stuff ourselves. But my mum lost a lot of weight when we weren't there. And I'm not blaming staff for that, but I am blaming, you know, management. And I'm asking, you know, why? As was stated in the programme yesterday, Orpia in France, and my antennae were immediately up, and my brothers, I heard they'd taken over because he knew of their very poor reputation. And they rebranded when they came to Ireland. But why were they allowed purchase with such a bad reputation?
Yeah, just to explain in case people haven't seen the documentary last night. This is Emise was formerly known as Orpia, and it. There was a huge scandal in relation to expose of the care that was being provided, or rather not being provided, to residents in their care facilities in France. But as you say, it rebranded. And I think one of the questions that HICWA were asked by the programme makers was, should there have been a more stringent oversight given the issues that had been raised about their practices, Orpia's practices in France. But as I said, there was a huge number of questions actually asked by the programme makers of HICWA. We're really trying to get behind why, if all of these issues were apparent to them, why they, if you looked at the HICWA reports, you would not have any indication that that was the issue. But
I think there is a lot, like there's a lot of ticking boxes. Like you saw somebody there at a nurse's station and she was saying, oh yeah, you know, yeah, tick that off as an activity. You were chatting to him, weren't you? That's an activity. He's watching TV, that's an activity. Like, there is a lot of ticking boxes where if you drill down, you know, something quite different is occurring. Like, you could tick, you know, that, you know, patient fed, you know, took such an amount. But again, like, staff, people are really short-staffed. I actually made a complaint, not on my own mother's behalf, but I was observing, you know, I was in the dining room. It just happened to be, I know, with my mum, and a carer was, you know, she was having to feed two people at once. And one woman was literally almost having a panic attack because of the rate that feeding was happening. Now, I brought this to the attention of a nurse and who took it very seriously and came back to me and, you know, said that was being resolved. But like, people are under tremendous pressure in only a certain amount of time, and that's a real concern for families, because although we were in there every day, we obviously couldn't feed our mother every single time. And you know, you're always concerned, like, especially if somebody has dementia, you know, you look at their cues, do they want, are they opening their mouth for this? I've seen people like spoons put up to them, kind of, you know, pushed, you know, when they obviously they didn't want to take this, you know, and that was the instance that I reported. But like, you know, these are basic things. Feeding somebody, keeping them clean, these basic things weren't happening for people. That's the very least we expect. You know, I think the consultant there mentioned a life worth living. You know, a life worth living. I think some of those people were asked, do you want to continue? They probably would have said no, because there wasn't anything extra happening. You know, they were sitting there, the person's watching them. Nobody, she wasn't able to talk to them. You know, she obviously couldn't interact properly because she's one person there with seven people. And one of the things I really noticed that happened differently when Emise took over was, previous to that, there were more activities. There was the previous owner would kind of contract in activities. So there was, you know, people coming in to do various things, and that reduced greatly. And also, there's wonderful activity providers where my mum is. Very caring, again, very dedicated people, but there's not enough of them. And, like, there's activities like, they can't, you can't do a one-size-fits-all. Like, my mum with, like, really advanced dementia was in a quiz, you know, where they were asking, I don't know, what's the capital of blah, blah. And, of course, you know, I liked that my mum was there because the activities coordinator is really lovely and he'd have a little word with her, or she'd have a little word with her. But, like, that wasn't an appropriate activity. And there was all these people sitting around with these... My mum was sitting there, like, with a sheet and a pencil in front of her. Now, you know, she didn't know what to do with that pencil. And, you know, previously there would be enough people so that somebody could sit beside somebody. And staff were so good. If they had a minute, they would go in and sit with the people during the activity. But that's actually... Like, you know yourself, I mean, loneliness will kill people. And people are lonely in those nursing homes. They're lonely because they don't have enough activity and they don't have enough interaction.
Yeah, but that was one of the things that were witnessed by the researchers, that they basically falsified information on electronic logs to create the impression that they had engaged in activities that had not happened, basically.
But you see, my
I saw that on the program. I can't say that's the case where my mum was, but I know there's not enough activity.
Yeah, no, that
there,
was done just know. And just to be clear,
and all of the families will say that as well.
Yeah, and that. Celine, and just to be clear, because I just don't want to crisscross, because we're talking about a number of different places now. That was in the Benevan Manor home in Glasnevin that was observed by the undercover journalists, the undercover care workers that were in there. Patricia, can I just ask you about that activities piece? Because obviously it's a huge part of keeping, making the day, the time pass, because it can be a long day. And also just engaging people and keeping brains active and people physically active as well. Like,
absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, it's about caring for the whole person, not the old person. That's what I would say. And I suppose the question I would ask, not just in relation to the activities in that nursing home, but the overall care in the nursing home, where was the governance?
Yeah,
where
I'd
was
agree.
The oversight? You know, where was the nursing manager? Where was the director of nursing? Where was anybody that was going to direct all of these staff? Fair enough, if they were short-staffed, they were short-staffed. If we're short-staffed here, I'm a qualified nurse. I'm not afraid to get my hands dirty. I'll empty a commode, I'll bring a person to the toilet, I'll wash them, whatever it takes. You know, we've all been short-staffed at some point, but you have to have a contingency to deal with that. You can't just say, well, we're short-staffed, end of story. I mean, they were short-staffed when they had 55 people in the nursing home, and yet they took in another 15. That doesn't make sense to me. Why did they take in more people when they hadn't enough staff to care for what they had?
I think it's important to say as well, Patricia, because I don't want to damn any individual in this, because the programme makers did also say they did see examples of some very good care being delivered.
Absolutely.
But obviously that wasn't the overall picture there. But just to put that on the record as well. Would you hang on for me, Patricia? And please hang on,
sure.
Celine. I need to take a break, but obviously we'll be sticking with this.
Sure.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Well, it takes 2 minutes while we take that. Okay. I never saw that coming. And you just follow what I do with me.
Okay.
We're going to do it together.
I just don't want to hurt her. Or
no, you're not going to hurt her. I will hold her like this and for the trousers. And you will do the same. Hold this trousers.
Hold the trousers.
And lift her up with both hands.
That was just a very brief extract from the programme there. Like, what we were listening to there was a member of staff telling the undercover health assistant who was in there, who was worried about lifting a patient or managing a patient. She was saying, this is how you lift her. The undercover health assistant was saying, do we not need the hoist? Don't we need the right equipment? But she was being told, no, do it this way instead. And she lifted up the resident from under her arms and by the trousers, by the resident's trousers. Patricia, do you remember that scene from
I do. I do.
It was very, very, very distressing, wasn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, there were a lot of points in the programme that were very distressing. But at the end of the day, it's very... I mean, I know that girl was undercover, so she, in a sense, she wasn't a real member of staff, but she was there as a real member of staff. And as a new member of staff, it's very hard to go against a culture that's embedded in a place. You know, if the culture is, sure, we'll just do it this way because it's quicker, it's very hard to go against that as a new member of staff, to have that level of self-assuredness.
And that staff member was very self-assured and kind of said, I know it's not allowed, but this is how we do it.
Yeah, and to me, that's embedded in the culture of the organisation. It's not a one-off situation. It's not a situation where, I don't know, somebody was using the hoist and they couldn't gain access to it or whatever. To me, that was embedded in the culture of the organisation because, yet again, I go back to my point, there was no governance or oversight. Who was supervising these people? If there's a nurse on the shift, the nurse supervises the carers. If there's a clinical nurse manager on the shift, she supervises the nurses and the carers. There's a line of management, a governance structure, but where was it? Where was it to support these staff on the floor? The likes of that girl who was saying, no, I'm not comfortable to do this, we need the hoist. And she's been essentially talked down by somebody who says, well, I know it's not right, but this is the way we'll do it anyway. They're not made of glass. I mean, what was she thinking? They're not made of glass. They're human beings. It's like that consultant said, take older out of the situation. Don't call them older people. They're people. They are people like ourselves. How would we like to be treated? I'm so outraged. I'm so angry. I am so heartbroken. I just can't express it. And I think the difficulty for places like where I work, I've been here for 16 years. I'm very proud of my record here. But we're just going to get tarred with the same brush. And it's so unfair. It's like I said to you that my employer, the proprietor of this nursing home, has dedicated her life to older people. And she sits in front of the television in the evening and says, have I wasted my whole life? Now, that's a terrible thing to have to hear from anybody who has dedicated their life to it.
I think, yeah, and what was very striking as well from that scene, actually, was the fact they never... There was no chat with the resident herself.
No.
And there was a lot of that going on. There was a lot of things
absolutely
being done to people
no
without actually talking to them like you would, like, as you say,
yeah,
any
I
human
mean,
being.
It's as if they were a task to complete rather than a person to care for. That's how it came across to me. This was a task to complete, not a person to be cared for. And I think there's no way back from that. If that is something that a person believes, then they're not for the caring professions. If that's how they want to treat people, this is not the job for them.
Of course, there is a whole other question as well about how much we value that job in the first place. And, you know, it's that point was being made this morning as well, I think, in relation to the not just how much people are paid, but just how much society generally values those caring jobs. And, you know, and they are really, really complex jobs, you know, emotionally,
absolutely,
intellectually, you know, might have dealing with lots of, you know, complex medical situations. And yet a lot of people are on very, very low wages in that sector, as you well know, Patricia.
Well, I'm sure there are. I mean, it's the same for every sector. There's always going to be someone who will take advantage of the rules or the minimum wage or whatever it may be. I can only speak for the nursing home that I work in. I don't have experience of the nursing homes that were highlighted in the programme. But I know for a fact that we're all very well paid here. I put my hand up and say I'm probably overpaid, in fact. It can't be about the money. If you want to provide a service such as a nursing home, if you want big profits, your focus is in the wrong place. Yeah. That's what I would suggest. I mean, care is care. The clue is in the name. This is a nursing home. It's their home.
Patricia,
the care that they receive should be excellent across the board, whether I'm getting €10 an hour or €20 an hour, €30 an hour. Now, I appreciate that if people don't feel they're being well enough paid, they won't have the same motivation, perhaps. I understand that, absolutely. But at the end of the day, they are caring for people. They're not stacking beans on a shelf. It's people.
Patricia, hang on. I want to bring in Pauline. Pauline, good afternoon.
Hello, Casey. How are you?
I'm well, Pauline. Pauline, you were a director of nursing in a nursing home.
Yes. Yeah, I was. I did my training first in England and I trained under HICRA. And HICRA is this thing, policy. And policy is important because policy lays down the groundwork of where you start and where you finish, i.e. all the laws of governance. And that goes for every individual that steps into a nursing home. Be they, I don't like the word old people. They are residents of a nursing home where they should receive everyday care, normal care with their special needs at the height focus.
Yeah. Watching that last night, Pauline, what did you think?
It was very dark. I was so horrified. I was speechless. I woke this morning and my first thought was going through all the domains of practice that was not carried out. And like your previous speaker there, where was management? We did not see them. We saw the untrained healthcare staff coping with situations they were not trained or educated to.
Well, we did see them, Pauline, getting some training, actually. Wasn't that part of it?
There's training and training. And then there's the policy laid down within the nursing home that things have to be done in by the book. Not when you see a member of staff saying, well, we could use the hoist, but it's quicker to drag them along and push them into a chair, not thinking that they could wind up with wound care, the shock of being pushed into a chair, the frustration it caused that poor gentleman last night, that would not have happened if had he been put in a wheelchair or on a hoist. The apparatus was not available. There was no slings, and the slings have to be according to the patient's needs. There was no slide sheets on the beds where we saw time and again residents being moved up the bed, dragged up by their shoulders, very thin, emaciated residents. That the one thing that came across, no management, supervision, no holistic care of any kind. It was like, do what you want to do. There's nobody to account to. That's what came across last night. I will say, Katie, and I'm very strong on this, the backbone of any nursing home is their care staff. They outnumber the registered staff. Yet they are not, some of them have no training. And I will stand over that. Instead of being trained, they should be on a register and hold a license. You don't drive your car, you have to have a license. An architect won't build a house and start midway up the wall. It'll fall apart.
Yeah.
If they're not trained properly, professionally, holistically, empathetically, what is education today?
But can you train empathy into somebody, Pauline, is the question that a lot of people will ask. I mean...
Yes. Empathy, we learn from one another. And when it's written down in format and they know how to read it, education gives us the knowledge how to do our work in a competent, confident manner. If you have those things... Those staff last night didn't seem to have anyone to turn to.
Hang on with me 1 second, because I want to play people just one other clip here. This is one, and I'll just warn people, it was really distressing. I just hear the audio version of it now, and it's hard, and I just want to say this, very hard to get across in an audio clip how distressing and disturbing seeing this happen in front of your eyes in that programme last night. This is where there was a man, he was obviously confused, obviously upset, and he was being ushered, kind of forcefully ushered down back to his room, where he was then pushed into a chair, and then his trousers were pulled down, and they changed his pad. Let's just see, have a listen.
Keep walking.
Your mom will be able to.
And actually what you can hear, the that low voice there going, oh God, oh no, that's actually the undercover care worker who was just obviously completely horrified. And it was really distressing, just the rough handling of that poor man and just the indignity of how he was treated. And actually, that's a word we haven't used today, but dignity. Like,
there was no dignity. There was no dignity for any of those residents I viewed last night. But having said that, they rushed the poor gentleman down the corridor. Had that person a walking aid, a rollator, or put him in the wheelchair, his stress would be much lowered. The only defence that poor gentleman had last night was to kick out and use his voice to say, I'm not happy with my care. That poor care continued by pulling his trousers down instead of easing them off him. That, you learn that. Lots of people don't know how to do that, but they say, oh, I've learned something new today. That's a much easier way for all of us. And note, I'm using teamwork for all of us. There should have been two people. Had they used a proper procedure, that gentleman would not have been this distressed. I saw another episode, a gentleman that wanted to go out for a walk. A simple thing that's so cost-effective, there was nobody there for that poor person, gentleman. Now, staffing. There's a ratio of staffing. There's, when HICR comes in, they look at my list, my rota of staff and their status. There should be activities coordinators, healthcare staff, registered general nurse staff, and then I had to show if I had wound care and I didn't have somebody with specialist wound training, I had to seek it from outside and bring them in. That's how you care for people. If they wanted to go to the dentist, their families would let us know. We could arrange for them to go out or be escorted with one of our staff who would take care of them. The same for any... You start at the top of the head and you walk down.
Pauline...
And everything... I was really, really so horrified last night. And it's to do with we need to train our healthcare staff. Just like we train our nurses. When you think about hydration.
Yeah. Pauline, will you hang on? Hang on for me, please. And Celine, hang on. And Patricia, I need to take a break. We'll be back after these.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Just there in the last short while, another development in relation to this story. I'm told that a nursing home in Portlaoise, this is the Portlaoise home that featured last night, run by MEs Ireland, breached a restriction on admissions imposed by HICWA earlier this year. And it's saying here that HICWA confirmed that following an inspection of the residence Portlaoise in February of this year, it initiated proceedings to stop admissions to the nursing home. But they didn't do that. And that there was apparently a flurry of admissions took place to the home in late April, and during which time the RTÉ investigates had an undercover healthcare worker in there. So they've asked, RTÉ Investigates has contacted MEs Ireland for comment. The company has not yet responded to that. We've asked for a representative as well, if they want to come in. There was an apology included in the programme, a written one last night. We said if they want to come on today, we would love to hear from them. That was the Portlaoise home. The other home that featured last night was Ben Evan Manor in Glasnevin. And Susan, good afternoon to you.
Hi.
Susan, Your dad is in Benevan Manor.
He is, yeah.
Just where are you right now?
I'm actually outside the nursing home in my car. I didn't want to speak in the room.
So did you had you any idea of what was coming down the tracks?
Not at all. We wouldn't have come over here. My dad wouldn't be here. Nothing. This is totally out of our jurisdiction, regardless of his care needs. But we would not have come over and viewed a room here knowing we didn't know this programme was coming here.
Tell me, how long has your dad been in there?
3 weeks tomorrow.
Oh, so you just made the big decision and thought you had done the right thing.
Well, we just took a little sigh of relief and said a small little bit of respite. Took a big sigh and then thought he was getting on okay. And then I knew there was a programme coming up through watching the ads on RTE. And then yesterday morning, and having a cup of tea at 6:10, it came up on RTE. It was Benevan Manor. And my daughter just heard me saying, oh no, oh no, oh no. And I just started crying.
I presume you watched it last night, Susan, did you?
Oh yeah, yeah. Front row seat.
It was a hard watch for anyone, but I can imagine anyone who had a loved one in there. I cannot imagine.
Well, I was here yesterday till 6:15. There was a big party here yesterday. I don't know what they were celebrating, but there was a very big party and there was live music and there was cake and biscuits and refreshments and tea and coffee. And then my brother was over then last night then as well.
What has been your impressions since your dad has gone in, Susan?
Well, as I said, first and foremost, we were in a position where we were forced out of where he was. We had to get him out at this stage. He was left without a one-to-one, and he needs a one-to-one, and we needed him with a one-to-one for our peace of mind. So the hospital had taken the one-to-one off him, which left us with sleepless nights, not being able to eat, constantly on the phone reporting to each other. Me down at the hospital 7 days, the brothers down there 7 days, to just saying, well, we have to make a decision now. And I went to look at a good few HSEs, and I actually would not put my goldfish in them.
Really?
I was asked to look at Cherry Orchard, which was 12 dementia patients, men, to a unit.
Okay, because we can't verify any other thing you've been or places you've seen, Susan. If we could just go back to where we know, because we know we've been inside this nursing home that your dad is now in. Have you had any issues yourself since he has? And as you say, it's only been 3 weeks.
As I said, I'm just getting used to it. We're just getting used to it. So we just seen him, like, he does maths and he's music and he loves music. So I seen him, you know, a little bit happy. And I asked him a couple of times on the phone, did he like it? And he said no.
And did that worry you?
It did, yeah. A lot of stuff you see with this is put down to, oh, it doesn't matter, they've dementia, you know, or if you were told something, oh, sure, they've dementia. But, like, these dementia patients say all the same thing. Regardless of my father having dementia, I would trust my father still. He has that still, that intuition inside him that he knows. He knows when he doesn't like something and he knows he doesn't like somebody. And he doesn't get involved with people. He's always been a kind of a loner. So that'd be more worrying for me, you know, like he wouldn't ask for a cup of tea or anything.
In terms of the situation he's in today,
as I said, we wouldn't be in Finglas. We could only get him a one-to-one here. And when we had our meeting a month ago this Saturday, we were about 2 hours here, myself and my two brothers, and we said, yeah, it was a quick transition, and he was over here. Myself and my brother brought him over here. Tomorrow, 3 weeks. So it was all new to us, as I said. And him walking, I was just, today now his washing can't be found. I've offered to go to the laundry myself. I'm after being apologised that they can't find his clothes.
Right.
Because my father is still mobile. He's, you know, he's slowed down, but he's mobile. You know, I wouldn't be too happy about the sheet on the bed. It's very thin. It's actually wasp thin. And on the programme last night, there was, when they spoke about the double padding end of it.
Yeah.
I've asked here, since I've been here, has my dad gone to the toilet yet? Because I didn't see him being brought, like, or, you know, I know that from being in with the hospital, Dad, you need to go to the toilet. And they had said to me, and every time I asked, that was done this morning, and I said, yeah, it's 3 o'clock now.
What are you going to do, Susan?
For starters, I think we're going to have a meeting this week, myself and the brothers out here. I'm going to arrange that today. I am his decision-making representative. And I actually feel, and I'd imagine my two brothers feel as well, I feel that my trust has been really, really breached.
Yeah. I just can't imagine having sitting through last night's programme if you had somebody in there.
I put my father in these people's hands. And the actual man that we had the talk with, I actually looked him in the eye and I said to him, can I trust you? Because I'm handing you my father.
Susan, the very best of luck with whatever decision you make, and the very best of luck to your father. And thank you for getting in touch with us today.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
I was thinking there during the ad break, there must be so many Susans there right now thinking, what are we going to do? And because, of course, as she was pointing out as well, it's very, very hard to get nursing home places, particularly if your loved one needs, you know, high levels of care. So just the stress that this is must be causing to people. Anya, good afternoon. Do I have Anya on the line there?
Yes, this is Anya.
Hi, Anya. Now, Anya, your mom is in a home at the moment, is that right?
Yes, one of the EMAS homes, not one of the ones featured last night, but another one.
Right.
For the last 2.5 years.
And what when you saw the programme last night, Anya?
It was, the time when we had to make the decision that Mam needed to go somewhere. It was a time that was mixed with so much emotion. And we didn't want to let her go, but at the choice, we'd known she had dementia. We'd known that she would eventually need to go somewhere. We had prepared very well in that we'd actually got a list of all the local care homes. We were astonished at how many in the area. And we had visited a number of them, asked questions, got the guides, discussed things, and also in relation to how our mother would fit in and how our needs would be met in each one of them. So we felt we were very well prepared when the time came, because I think what happens to a lot of people is suddenly they have to make the decision and then they just go into the nearest, handiest nursing home, and they haven't, and that's accompanied with guilt. So initially we felt we're well prepared, but then she went into hospital and the decision was made that this was the time to go in. But it took us a week and we still felt very guilty. We felt unsure. And when Mam went in, now we were advised for the first month not to visit her and to let her settle in. We did not take that advice, and we are very glad we did not, because we saw others whose family had taken that advice and those people tended to be more distracted and felt that they were dumped there with their suitcases. But we were there and we visited Mom every day and helped her through and talked. She thought it was respite first. But any time she said, I want to go home, it wasn't that she said she was unhappy there, but she was always wanting to go home. But I think that's the part of, if I'm away somewhere, I always want to go home as well. So I understand that. So we did, you know, Mom did start to settle down. The guilt never goes away because no matter what, you can never give her this. She'll never, ever receive the same care in a nursing home, no matter how good, as when you give it at home. And you have to, in a way, learn to accept that. And that may be why then you look at little things and you have to let certain things go. Because some of my sisters, they were worn out with the care. But there were little things. I think the things with the pads and all, that brought home something to me that when we went in there, my mother was in pads already, but there was another friend of ours who was putting her mother in there at the time, and she had bought her mother lots of new knickers, and she was told, oh no, they won't be needed here, everybody goes into pads. And I think that's for the convenience of people.
Everybody goes into pads?
Oh, everybody goes into incontinence pads, there's no knickers. Yeah. That's what we found out very early. Now, our mother wasn't in the pad already, so it wasn't an issue there. But it made me very much aware that, and I think what we started to see is things were done a lot for the convenience of the staff or for the quicker running. And even those pads, they don't seem to change them from morning to night.
Well, that was the big issue where the nurse was actually saying that it was abuse, that the double padding, that you would put two pads on so that you wouldn't have to change.
Do it again.
Yeah.
Now, I would stand up for the staff because we have had some wonderful staff in the nursing home who've gone out of their way under restrictions to do things and to care for my mother. And I think we have been talking about the abuse of the elderly in those homes, but I think there's a certain abuse of those who work there as well, some of who are badly paid. And, you know, while certain people were depicted with certain acts, we don't know how stressed they were that day or if they had had they were staying there for extra time or if they were rushing to somebody else who was calling. We don't know the particular circumstances. Therefore, I would stand up for the staff because in the main, they have been wonderful. Quite often it's maybe inexperienced staff or staff that come and go, but the permanent staff are usually very good. But they work under severe restrictions. I have been there in the evening when my mother needed extra help, and I have walked the corridors. And they're long corridors. They're not designed very well. So you have these long, long corridors looking for somebody to come and give help. We had a recent incident where for 2 days in my mother's personal toilet in the room, there was a wheelchair covered with excrement and a filthy basin. That was left there for over 2 days. And even when we asked for it to be removed, everybody was looking and saying, oh, well, it's not my job. Whereas I feel if there's something to be done, you jump in and do it. I think some of it is lack of proper training. Some of it is inexperience. Some of them, they're very young. You know, it's hard for them. I felt the more mature people who had a bit of experience, they understood more because they're nearer in age or maybe they've had years of experience. But young people need to be trained up, so they need to be in the care of people who have more experience. And I didn't always see that.
Do we need, what we were hearing today is safeguarding legislation. Do we need to put this on the statutory footing here?
That wasn't in place because I remember Lee's Cross. I remember all the talk of it. And little did I know that in 20 years' time, I would be on the phone with my mother in a nursing home talking about, and finding out at this stage that there is no legislation. Yeah. That's astounding. And that's a crime on every person who should have put legislation into place. That is an abuse as well. Yeah. I mean, things come from the top. You know, when you see something going wrong somewhere, whether it's in an institution like this, a school, or in any other workplace, what goes on in the nursing home reflects on those who are in the top. If you've got somebody good on the top, it all works out underneath. If you've got somebody, and we've had a huge amount of personnel changing at the top. We've had several changes with people at the top. They seemed to sense there was something going on. Now we understand. And they were changing people around and moving them for the head person from nursing home to nursing home. So we had a good person. We lost a good person. So it's been a change, and it's been very difficult to talk because we are really involved with our mothers. So we have found that they listen to us.
Do you think you have that safety? There. You have the safety blanket of knowing that you're, as you say, very involved.
Yeah, we get involved with her regularly, but we also see things that we saw on the programme last night. And sometimes you're not sure how far do you go. We have had meetings, and sometimes we feel, well, it's not listened to. Or, you know, we had a problem with mom's nutrition, where she was losing weight. We weren't told she was losing weight. We only found out several months when I went in and saw she was being given one of these 40-sip drinks, which I am against. And we weren't even told she was getting that. Okay. She gets biscuits constantly when she's been told because of her diabetes she shouldn't be getting. So it's little things like that. If there's a care plan, it's not been adhered to. And as for activities, very poor. Recently, we even have to pay an increase for activities.
Okay.
I haven't seen any improvement.
Anya, I hate to cut you across because I know you have a lot to say. I have other people hanging on the line and my hour is nearly up. But thank you so much and the best of luck to you and your mom as well. We'll take that
Talk
break.
To Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joan, good afternoon, Joan.
Good afternoon, Katie. Katie, I'm only going to say a few words. I'm 82 years of age. I was shocked at the cruelty last night, especially in the third part of the programme.
Yeah.
It left me speechless. It actually left me in tears. There wasn't any kindness anywhere in either of the nursing homes. And I don't know why they call themselves homes. Because what do we do with the elderly when they get very ill? It's supposed to be another home for you. There was nothing like a home in that. As far as I know, Amis own 24 nursing homes. Now, that's a very big business. And I just saw and thought last night, they don't care. They just don't care about the elderly. And I actually go further to say that our country does not care about the elderly. We have a minister for the older people. I don't know what he does. I don't know what he's involved with.
Well, he was on Morning Ireland this morning. That's Kieran Donnelly.
Yeah, I didn't hear that.
He was saying they're taking this very seriously. Everyone is very shocked. Although, Kieran O'Donnell, apologies. Kieran O'Donnell is the minister with responsibility for older people.
Okay.
But that point you were making about, like, again, I'll go back. I said this at the top of the programme. 10 investment funds hold a third of all nursing home beds in the state.
Yeah.
Investment funds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's shocking. It's greed. It's greed. And they just put anybody in as a carer. And they don't actually. If you hire people, you should look after them. And there should be some teamwork. And they should be trained well. Mm. And then they feel valued, Katie. I didn't see anything in that last night. I mean, I couldn't believe that 20 years ago we looked at a similar programme.
Yeah.
And I also have to congratulate all of those involved in making the programme.
Absolutely.
Every single person.
It's because those programmes are very, very difficult to make for all sorts of reasons, obviously. And,
they are.
Aoife,
a lot of people my age would say, no, I didn't look at it at all. I couldn't look at that.
Yeah.
But you know something, Katie? I think we have to.
Yeah.
It's a point of life that we have to look at. I had my own husband in a nursing home here and in Cork. And I'm not going to name it, but everything was wonderful.
Yeah. Joan, you're an older person yourself.
That's right. You see, this is where I'm coming from. So I'm ashamed of myself. I think I'd shoot myself first.
Don't do that. Don't do that, Joan, please.
Put a drip up of gin and tonic into my vein and just go out of this world in a good mood. Because you would be scared to enter a nursing home now.
Well, Joan, will you hang on? Because there are other alternatives. And I want to hear about it now. Dr. Gerry Cowley, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. And I'm delighted to have the opportunity to speak. I'm horrified, of course, with everything that's going on and everybody that has spoken. My goodness, people deserve more than that. And that's exactly what I'm talking about. We have done something in Mulroney here for almost three decades, which we feel is the way forward. And it's by community, for community. And those big conglomerates do not belong. And the international evidence proves that the outcomes are very poor. So we're hell-bent going that way, and we need to turn around real rapid, because the real need is in the west of Ireland here, but also in inner city as well, and all over Ireland. People deserve the chance to stay in their own area, and all the surveys have proven that. It's about your connections. It's about your relations. Who the hell wants to go to a faraway place and a green site, greenfield site, unconnected with community? Like, that's nonsense. Government needs to get real on this, and we've even spoken to Minister Butler about this in the past, and I know that they are maybe listening, but they need to do something. And what they need to do is ensure that people can stay locally, supported by what we have in Mulroney, for instance, sheltered housing, support at home with a day centre and Meals on Wheels, and then high support if needed, but in your own community. So the guarantee is, as a business guarantee is, no matter how old or disabled you are, you can stay in your own community, and that's where people want to be. And we have become, by doing something that's only right for us to do, we stopped the sad side of migration of older people to institutions. We brought people back again. More than that, we're the biggest local employer we have been for the last almost three decades. So we have done something which has been a powerful economic mover for our village. We have saved our village in the process, and this can be done all over Ireland, and all it needs is support. We are doing it here. We have done it for the last 26 years, almost 30 years. We have stood the test of time, and we are going to continue to do it. And it is possible to do it.
And how do you guarantee the care levels in what you do there, Gerry? You know,
right. Well, OK. Well, we support people at home. We have sheltered housing. They can move sideways on the campus. We have a 26-bedded unit. And I am there. And I was there yesterday. And I was there today. And in fact, we put people on IV lines. We're broader than any nursing home, because I am an experienced GP, and there's 40 of us here that are retired in Mayo, for instance, and I am well used to dealing with people at home. And this is the problem now. Rural doctors have been replaced. They're all in A&E now, trying to cope with the lack of rural doctors. I put up drips on people. I put up IV antibiotics when needed, because these are self-limiting illnesses. People do not need to be in the A&E. They're packed in the A&E. We can do all this locally, and there's no reason why not, because we do everything that a nursing home does and more.
Patricia, last word to you on that.
I would just like to say to Gerry, he's obviously a success story within the sector, and that's absolutely wonderful to hear. I think sometimes he's probably lucky in the sense that he's a doctor, and that he can put up the IVs and he can do those kind of things. But what we find in our area, I suppose in a lot of rural areas in the country, is that it's very difficult to get doctors to buy into that, to help us to do that.
Okay.
But that's really what we're talking about, because all the surveys have proven that doctors, local doctors, should be bought into this by the government. It is possible to do it, and it can be done, and it will be done if people just sit down and do it and get together with it, because it's all possible.
Okay, well, a bit of hope there. There is another way. Dr. Gerry Cowley, thank you so much for that. But that's it for today. We're actually over time. Mark McGrath was on sound. Research today was by Richie Byrne, and Tara Lockery Grant produced.